This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is J-Dot Flan from What Is TWS, and this is my Saturday story. So the story starts in high school. I was pretty much a short, nerdy kid. I went to one of the like more notorious high schools in D.C. Because they had a math and science program there. But yeah, I wasn't from the neighborhood. I lived a long way away from school, so I was pretty much an outsider. I found like my niche in junior ROTC. For some reason, I loved like drilling ceremony and shining shoes and insignias and all that good stuff. And got myself some rank, got myself a little bit of power, and then, you know, kind of found myself, you know, in this school full of people. I just assumed everybody could kick my ass. But all of a sudden, you know, I'm telling people what to do, and I got a certain level of respect, and people are following me. And then what came with that, you know, normally you get a little bit of power, all of a sudden girls start looking at you. So I went from, you know, a nobody in that arena in my life to now, you know, not really having a serious girlfriend, to kind of like, I remember people placing bets and we would go on out of town field trips on like not who I was going to sleep with, but how many I was going to sleep with. And the crazy thing about all this is I don't know this shit is going on, and I'm like a virgin the whole time. I never hit any of these girls, but it's just, you know, a lot of rumor and conjecture about what I was doing and how I was maneuvering. But anyway, eventually, I did get a girlfriend. And when I say get a girlfriend, it's more like the Norbert type shit. Like, she pretty much came at me like, hey, you dating somebody? And I'm like, no. And it's like, well, you are now. And from that point on, I had a girl, and I was about like 16 years old. So, you know, 16 years old girlfriend, you know, y'all gonna be together forever in your head. So she's the love of my life. You know, first sexual experience, doing everything together. I'm sneaking out the house. We go to Baltimore to see a concert. She takes me to see Jay-Z for the first time. She was like a year older than me. So by the time I was a senior, she had already graduated. So we was just doing whatever. Like, she had a car. She was going whatever, doing whatever. So come time for me to go off to college. That's a long story that I won't get into, but I pretty much got an opportunity to go to this Jesuit school, like a Catholic college in Wisconsin, Marquette. I don't know why I'm trying to avoid saying the name, Marquette. This is pre-Dwayne Wade. It was not like a place to be. It was Marquette. So, my girlfriend's a little nervous. Like, this is the first time we're going to really be separated. And we was just getting into, like, the whole, you know, sexual thing. And, you know, like, I'm assuming we each other's first. I think that's what she told me. I don't know. But I'm going to go with that. Like, that's been my memory to this day. So, we're going to stick with that. But, so I'm leaving. It's an issue. But we're going to work it out. I got to go up there for the summer to do this program to kind of prove that I can be a college student. Because my grades was fucked. I had good test scores and my grades was horrible. I had like a 1-1 in my junior year. So anyway, we leave. I take I get a tape recorder that you're supposed to use to record lectures. And I record the sounds from one of our final sessions to take with me. School. So I got that with me. I get on this train. I go up to Milwaukee. I've never been this far away from home, never been to the Midwest. I don't know what. I've never been around Catholic people and this many white folks in my life. Don't know what I'm getting into. So I get up there, and as usual, I think like minorities tend to find each other. So it's only a couple of us on this campus in this summer program. And so we all kind of click. It's like five or six of us, one of them being my roommate. This was this real tall dude who was from Milwaukee, black dude. You know, he was like a Will Smith looking dude. So I hated him immediately. Like, you know, he's everything that I was. I wasn't tall. I wasn't the good looking, funny, outgoing dude. And here's this motherfucker's like, that's in the room with me. I got to see him every day. And he wore, flip flops with socks, which is one of the things that if you do, like, I look at you different. Like, if I see you do it, I can know that you do it. But if I see you do it, then all of a sudden, like, a small part of how close we could have been is gone. But I digress. So in this program is this half German, half Korean girl. I don't know if I should use real name. Let's call her Judy, right? So Judy is just like an enigma to me. Like, I've never seen nothing like this before. It's not like she was just like drop dead gorgeous or anything. She just was new, and she wasn't white. Like, I knew I could never bring a white girl home, but like maybe a half German, half Korean, I might have seen that. I don't know. I wasn't thinking that far. She was just different. And we started to like we started to gel as friends. Like, you know, she obviously had that little bit of like black curiosity. She wanted to know, you know, all about me and how I grew up and, you know, the music I listened to, how many drug deals I knew, you know, shit like that. And I'm from DC, so I could play it up, you know, as suburban as I really am, and, you know, as square as I really am when I'm around folks don't know no better, I could play it up. Like, I was the hardest nigga moving, you know, in DC. Like, I was getting it in. But anyway. But yeah, we would share like music. And if you really want to like get close to me, like ask me about music. And when I get to talking about music, like, that's a different level of conversation. So this was becoming like a real close friend for me. And then I find out through a rumor that, you know, she's been going out partying, and one of the dudes we knew had tried to take advantage of her one night when she got a little too drunk. So me and my chivalrous ways, you know, I decided I'm gonna put the cape on, and Judy, I'm almost put the real name out there, Judy, you ain't going to no more parties by yourself. Anytime you go to a party, I'm going. And that's just how it's going to be. You know, part of that could have been me trying to be, you know, Prince Charming and take care of her. Part of that was probably because I ain't never really been to parties before. And I really just wanted to be cool for a second. So I started going to parties. If you don't know what parties are like on a white campus, it's like a keg. It's music. It's lights, and it's a lot of people standing around. Like, it's not much dancing. It's never any food. It's just a keg or like a trash can full of beer, all kinds of brands you ain't never heard of, and people standing around. And for most of the parties, you pay for a cup. Like, you pay $5 to get the red solo cup, and then you can go to the keg as many times as you want. The fun thing to do would be to go out, go to the first party, get a cup, and then see how many other parties you can sneak that cup into before you got caught and just party all night for $5. So I'm going to this party for Judy. We're getting fucked up, but everything is pretty cool. My roommate starts going with us too. My girlfriend back home is not necessarily happy about this. Like, I'm playing it to her, like, you know, I'm just trying to be the good guy, protect this girl she got taken advantage of. So that's why I'm going to these parties. I'm not having fun, none of that. I just want to make sure she's okay. So my roommate starts going with us. And so I remember this one night in particular. We're hitting parties. And I got the little campus vans. So people was actually using the campus vans to get to different parties. So we leave one spot and we get on the van. And it's me, Judy, and my roommate. And a couple stops in, the frat boys get on, and one of them got a broken leg. So me and my roommate get up, and we kind of do like an awkward standing thing in the van so that this dude could sit. And so that made us immediately the coolest freshmen that ever lived, and we was going to rock with them for the rest of the night. So we get to their little frat house, guest of honor, you know, give them whatever they want, get in free. You know, this is like a three-story little row house with a pool in the back and lights and music, everything going. This is a WAP party. And I guess WAP, I think it may be the white name for Jungle Juice. I just realized that Jungle Juice and WAP was the same thing, or maybe the same thing. But if you don't know what it is, basically at this party, they had a bathtub, and you pour any and all liquor you can find into the bathtub, usually mostly Everclear, and just whatever the fuck else is in the house in the bathtub, and you like roughly chop up fruit, like it's not done in any corner kind of pretty or sanitary way, just roughly chop fruit, and they dump it in the fucking tub, and you just take your cup, hand and all, and you just scoop in there, get as much as you can, and that's your that's your beverage for the night. So, you know, we had graduated from, you know, kegs and beer in a trash can to liquor out of bathtub. Like, this was a step up. This is a big move. And shit was really going to get crazy that night. So we doing that. Me and Judy decided to step out to the backyard where the lights and shit are and just, you know, get some space so we could talk. You know, I wanted to get her, you know, just me and her so I could be interesting and funny again and she could stop looking at all these frat boys. You know, I needed my moment. So we out there, we talking, and my eyes are attracted to movement. So at some point in the conversation, I say something to her. I see something move out the corner of my eye. So I turn, and when I turn back, Julie is gone. Judy. God damn. All right. Judy is gone. All right. So I, like, my heart sank. Like, I, in my mind, I'm just boring, not interested. I was saying something. She saw a moment when I turned my head. She got the fuck out of there. Like, and I'm just, like, I'm panicking. I'm heartbroken. All of this. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm getting ready to ask somebody, you know, to help me find her. You know, I don't know what that was going to do. But at some point, like, I just dropped my head because I'm like, fuck it. And when I look down, there's Judy. She just passed out. So I motion for my roommate. We grab her, like, it's time to get out of here. You know, like, drunken, passed out freshman girls are contraband in frat houses. Like, they don't want that anywhere near their frat house. Like, that is a serious problem. So we got to get her out now. So we're getting her out. Somebody says something about her being drunk on the way out. She kind of comes to for a moment, throws a shoe at him. I got to go get the shoe and then hope that, like, they can be cool with the fact that the shoe got thrown at him. Like, you know, she just drunk. Everybody be cool. We get her outside. She's like gets in a fight with a tree and she's punching this tree. And finally, you know, she goes down for the count. So as much as we wanted to take a breath right there, like, all right, she's finally down. Whew, we can regroup, figure out the plan. Then you realize you two black dudes on a majority white Jesuit campus in the middle of Milwaukee standing over a passed out German Korean girl. Like, this is not the most comfortable situation you could be in. And we got to rectify this, like real soon. So only plan we could think of is we got to carry her back to her dorm. And our dorms are dry dorms, so you really can't come back to your dorm drunk. But what else are we going to do? So he grabs her upper body. I get her feet. We start walking. We're walking as quickly as possible. Like, so we carry this drunk girl through this, like, residential neighborhood, which I'm sure is like half frat houses, half like just people live there type shit, hoping that we don't stir, you know, we don't cause any ruckus, nobody looks outside. I start to notice this thing, like, approaching us from the side, like it's walking up alongside us. I'm not turning to look at it. I'm trying to do that, like, if you don't act like you're doing something wrong, then you're not doing nothing wrong, like, nobody can, you know, until you caught, you're not caught type shit. So I noticed there's something following us, but I'm not going to act guilty so that maybe we got a chance of getting away with it. So this thing is following us, it's getting closer. It's saying something, but I'm like trying not to pay it any attention, trying not to look at it. We just need to get back to the dorm, stay focused. Finally, whatever this thing is gets close enough that, like, my curiosity gets the best of me. So I turn and look at it. And I shit you not, I can only describe this as, like, it was like a black elf or something. Like, it was this really short, I don't know if he was a midget. Can you say midget? I don't know. A little person, with a bike that was like twice as tall as he was, like how he was riding the bike, or maybe he stole it and was just trying to get it someplace, because he's walking alongside the bike, but it's way too big for him. And the whole time we have been walking, he has been trying to buy his way into whatever we was about to do to this Korean girl. Like, he's offering us all kinds of drugs, weed, he got coke, he got a spot we can go to, whatever, just let him get in on the festivities. Like, he's not buying that this is our friend, we're trying to get her home. It's like, nah, bro, y'all two black dudes in Milwaukee, she's Korean, I know what's going down, just let me in. I got whatever you need, all that stuff. And he followed us, I mean, for blocks, like, just would not stop with the offers of every and anything imaginable so that he could get a piece of this action. We finally did get her back from going wrong, and all went well that night. The immediate drama was over. But the story is not over. And this next part of the story is, like, if it didn't happen to me, if I didn't know this stuff to be true because it happened to me, I wouldn't believe it. So if you don't believe it, I get you, but I swear to God, this is exactly what happened to me my freshman year of college, right? So I told you this whole story about getting this drunken Korean girl back to her dorm room. But mind you, the whole time, I have a girlfriend back home. And I have to explain, like, why I'm not at the dorm to take calls and what I'm doing and all this stuff to this girlfriend. So she starts to get really pissed off about this Judy situation. And without me knowing it, some things were already in play that was going to create a situation that she could really just fuck my life up in the worst way. So, again, I'm from the D.C. area. I'm from the DMV. Only ever been in the DMV. Furthest I've been away from home is, like, I think we went to Canada for a sixth grade trip. Other than that, born and raised in the area. My girlfriend at the time, to my knowledge, is the same way, born and raised in the DMV. I think she went to California for a year or two, but that's about it. But somehow, some fucking way, the universe had aligned itself so that this dude that was my roommate, that I hated, who was the exact opposite of me, I think his father was like an ex-NBA player, so he was just tall, athletic, all that shit, all the girls loved him. But as far as I knew, he only ever lived in Milwaukee. But somehow, his parents and my girlfriend's parents knew each other, and that the two of them had dated. So the first fucking roommate I get in college, 800 miles away from home, is my girlfriend's ex-boyfriend. And they know who each other are, but I don't. So the reason he's been going out to parties, me and Judy, is because he's on, you know, surveillance patrol. He's supposed to be watching, making sure nothing is going wrong. He would do dumb shit like, I come home drunk, and he would be like, wake up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and he's like 6 foot, and drop dictionaries. Like, he just hold dictionaries above his head and drop them and wake me up. Like, and I just thought he's just a douche. Like, he's just a dick. So that's just the stuff he does. But he was being led by my ex-girlfriend. So it gets deeper, right? So I'm on the phone, and to make her feel better, I'm spinning all these tales about how, you know, Judy just needs a friend and she's needy and I'm blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm doing it the worst. I'm selling it the best way I can. So it's not me chasing after this girl. It's me, like, I'm being charitable, you know. And then I'm talking about everybody that's there. Like, so secretly, if you don't know this about me, and I'm sorry, Jay, I don't like people. Most people I can't stand, and I'm getting better with that. I don't not like people. I just, well, it is what it is. It is what it is. So I had some shit to say about everything. And most of it was to make her feel more comfortable, as like she wasn't going to lose her status as my best friend, even though she wasn't around me constantly. So I had to make everybody else seem like they wasn't quite up to par. But at Marquette at the time, if you knew somebody's name, you could call the directory and they would give you the number. So I'm talking about Joe, blah, 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 on the phone, and I'm telling her how he this and he fat and he stinks and all this other shit all the time. And she just is writing down the name, calling the directory, and then getting Joe on the phone, telling him, you know, events and shit that I've told her about so he knows it's legit, like she has a connection with me. That's the only way she can have this information. And then telling him all the shit I've been saying and then offering him the chance to get back at me by joining her team and being on team surveil, drive, flame, crazy types. So this happens to everybody I know. And this is a, you know, as far as minorities are concerned, this is a small campus. Like, it's, I only got a few people. And now everybody I know is, like, on her squad. And they all, like, just doing those shit to fuck with me or, you know, not showing up or turning their back, you know, not being here, not being there, or saying they're going to do this and whatever, whatever, whatever. And they do come around just to watch me. And now she asking me questions on the phone. It's like oddly specific or something I did. It's getting crazy. And then the whole time that this is happening, she has like created a whole world. Like I call it the Black Dawson's Creek. She would be calling me and she would be telling me these stories about what's happening to her on this community college campus and these dudes and her friends. I mean, it was, this stuff rivaled any teen drama from back in the 90s. Yeah, like, this was Dawson's Creek. It was all that shit. It was Gilmore Girls, all that act. Like, it had a full out cast and sets and, like, different locations that they would be. And this was happening and this was happening. So, like, my life is fucked up. I ain't really got no friends all the way out here. And then my girlfriend back home was telling me these stories that seemed like something could be going on, you know, and they got all these people and I'm caught up in the drama, like answering the phone just because I want to hear what happened next. And if I know she's talking to me and she's not talking to, I think his name was Clyde or something, the dude in her story that was like the cute nigga or something like that. So all this is going on. And so finally, she puts the nail in the coffin. She gets to Judy. And you know, she gives Judy the same spiel, tells her all the little details, let her know she for real, and then tells her the stuff that I've been saying. And Judy's like, nah, he would never do that. Like, this is the kind of bond that we had at this point. Like, we was close, and I value her as a friend, and I think she did too. There may have been potential for more, but we had never crossed that line. She's like, nah, he would never do that. So, for the youngins that's listening to this, back in the day, there was a thing called three-way calling. And one of the most infamous tricks of all time that for some reason I never could see coming was your girl or somebody would call somebody else first. They'd be on the phone, and then they would three-way call you but would not tell you the other person that was on the phone. They would just stay silent and listen. So I get a call from my girl one night, and, you know, she's filling me in on the whole Dawson's Creek shit, and she's asking me about Julie, and I'm laying it on thick this night, like, hey, she's just needy, man, and, you know, she keep dragging me out to all these parties, and I don't really want to go, but, you know, I can't see myself letting her be out there and something bad happening to her, blah, blah, blah. Now, I wish I could just have the time to myself to stop. I'm really, like, just going in, like, overtime, because now I'm trying to compete with this other story that she's telling me and keep her on my side and not with Clyde or whatever the fuck his name is. So at some point, I hear the whimper in the background. I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, Julie been on the phone the whole time. She just calls me a piece of shit or whatever, hangs up. That's the end of it. I end up, you know, repairing shit with my girl because she wasn't trying to get rid of me. She was trying to get rid of everybody around me so that I needed her. So at this point that she's done that, she's like, good. Like, we can go back to being me and you because you ain't got nobody else. So that's how I rocked for a couple of years. And then, amazingly enough, the story's not over. a couple years ago, me and her, you know, of course, like, I'm not the best boyfriend, because she's not the best girlfriend. And she really does, like, treat me like shit. And, I mean, I guess she stole, like, she would get mad and, like, steal money from me. Like, she would get in trouble and need money for her car note. So I'd pay her car note or give her my card or whatever to pay her car note. And then if she got mad at me later on, she would call the insurance company or whatever, the loan company, and make like two payments in advance with my information that's still stored, you know. So I just look up one day and it's like $1,400, $1,500 gone, you know, because she done paid a car note. I think one time she hacked into my bank and paid a student loan of mine like $1,000. So I couldn't even, it was nothing I could do then. I can't go to the student loan company like, I didn't mean to pay you what I owed you. Can you please give it back? You know, and say it would be crazy shit like that, but she was all I had, so I stuck in it. But like I said, I wasn't exactly a nice guy. So at some point, my roommate, we'll call him, I want to call him Richard because that's closer to his real name, but I don't want to get it fucked up with, you know, my brother. We just call him R or some shit. I don't know. So R gets into some drama. He gets kicked out of the house. He calls my girl. And at this point, you know, because he's Mr. Suave and I'm Mr. I really don't give a fuck. So she decides she's going to Milwaukee to make sure he's okay. So she leaves, go to Milwaukee. And I don't hear from her for like days. So basically when she comes back, they together. And I think I called him to be like, all right, dude, you know, she says she loves you. If this is what it's going to be, just take good care of her. And I think, you know, I called him and I got to the, she says she loves you. And he's like, that's what you're calling me for. I already know. I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, he's just the most dickish motherfucker alive. Like, so it got to the point where, like, it's not that I wanted her. It was that I couldn't lose to this motherfucker. Like, anybody, you could have left me for anybody and I'd have been like, bet, you know, that's an upgrade, you know. Happy for you, do you? But not this motherfucker. Like, I gotta win now because it's this motherfucker. So I stay in the picture and she would come back home from seeing him and me and her, we still doing our thing. And, you know, she doing the same shit I was doing with Julie, like talking shit about him, but like on the pillow talk that dudes hope no girl is really ever saying about them, that type of stuff. And, but I'm sure it probably was going both ways. I don't know. But I feel like I'm winning somehow. And then eventually she goes to Milwaukee. I'm wrapping it up. She goes to Milwaukee. And I get a call one night. Because she used to call me from his apartment. And we, like, had phone sex. Like, this is just crazy shit. She would... the whole situation is fucked up. So anyway, she get up there to Milwaukee. She called me one night. And she found that he's not home. He's at work or something. And she found a list in his apartment. And it's got all these girls' names on it. And she knows the name at the beginning of the list because, you know, they've had conversations about, you know, I guess, who their first loves and whatever was. So the name at the top of the list is like the girls, you know, he lost his virginity to. And she don't know all the rest of the names, but some of them are people he's been in relationships with. And it's like 30 names on the list, and she's like 18. So she makes the correlation that this must be a list of all the girls that he's fucked, and it got to be in chronological order. And I agreed with her, one, because I wanted her to finally see how much of a dick this dude really was, and two, because he seemed like the kind of dude that was that much of a dick that would have a list like this in his house. So now the drama turns to how she's going to pay him back. And so this is the girl who's done all of this shit I told y'all about, who's done all of this behind the scenes, manipulating people, you know, fucking my life up psychologically. Like, she had me fucked up for real. It's like, what she... And all I did was, like, flirt too much with a Korean chick. She got a list, and it's 12 names after hers, and she thinks it's all the girls she's been with. So... this whole time we are on the phone. She's holding the phone, talking to me, coming up with a strategy of what she's going to do to pay him back. And this is what she came up with. No pun intended, I shit you not. You'll get it in a second. She decides that she's going to take a plate from the kitchen. She goes into the bathroom. And again, while I'm on the phone, she shits on the plate. Right? So she shits on the plate. She's describing to me the consistency of the shit. Like, this is insane. She's describing to me that it's runny and all this other shit. I don't know how she's doing it with the phone, and she got the plate and whatever. So she sits on the plate. Then she takes the plate, she puts it in a microwave. She sets the microwave for 60 minutes, and she walks the fuck out. This is a true fucking story. I never heard from her ever again. I think I called him and left a message on his voicemail, like, you know, what's your plate smell like? Like, this is something stupid. Like, for some reason, I'm doing my victory dance because I got this girl back. That's the dumbest shit ever. Moral of the story is, if somebody does, you know, like, if somebody cheats on you and leaves you for somebody, like, you don't, that they're not the prize. Like, you're the your enemy is not the person they left you for. They're probably your best friend. You should clap it up and be glad that you're done with that person. Don't try to get them back. I took back the girl that shot on the plate. Yeah. I will forever always know that she's capable of shitting on a plate and putting it in a microwave. They out there. Watch who you fuck over. That's my story, man.